Mike Wimacher with you here on WMAY. Oh, what happened there? What happened there? Oh, no.
Everything bad happens to me.
Oh, it's the worst.
Gosh.
Out of the kindness of your heart, you wake up early for zero pay.
Oh.
Oh, no. That, at least we got the sound of that. You could hear Johnny's headphones break in real time, just like his heart. Oh, my God.
Pathetic.
Oh, my God.
There. Okay.
I don't mean to laugh at your misfortune, but that was very Charlie Chaplin or Johnny Depp, Benny and June try to pick his hat up and still and still kicking it every 5 seconds. Like just when he thought he had it in his hand, it slips out like butter, and there it goes.
Yeah, we'll put a picture of what I look like right
yes,
now.
Yes, please go to the Mike and Molson Facebook page. Oh God, I feel bad. It is the that you know. It's hard to put it in perspective for people out there who do a real job,
every day, working hard.
But it's like what just transpired there. It's like the worst thing that can possibly happen to somebody in our profession, because now you either have to be the DJ at the club and take the entire headphone off and just hold the one ear up, or you have to be just floppy eared.
Well, it's okay. I mean, so you sit down at your desk at work and one armrest in your chair snaps off. And it's just it's just ridiculous enough to be annoying, and there's no there's nothing you can do about it.
Right.
So,
yeah.
And now for the rest of the day. So.
Or if you're somebody working in construction and one half of your kind of tool belt is devoid of tools.
Yeah.
So you just weighted on one side the whole time, and you just can't get the correct screwdriver or whatever.
You got a hole in one shoe.
Right.
And it's on a rainy day like this.
Yeah. It's just not great. But we soldier on for you and your. And your entertainment. That's okay. That's all right. But wrapping up this hour, we just talked with Eric Davis out in CinemaCon. There is a movie that is coming out later this month that just looks absolutely bizarre. And apparently, people at the screenings of this are walking out in droves, which is never a good sign for a movie.
What's going on?
Yeah, the movie in question is called Sasquatch Sunset. And basically, it is 90 minutes of just Sasquatch. It is produced by Jesse Eisenberg, who is in you know him from a lot of different things, Social Network and the like. Mm-hmm. He stars in it as well. But the thing is, you don't know it's him because all the stars are dressed as Sasquatch the entire movie. Like, and apparently, there is zero dialogue in this 90-minute Sasquatch quote-unquote documentary. So there's no dialogue. There's just grunting. There's no voiceover narration to make it seem like a faux documentary. It is just...
So why Sasquatch?
I don't know.
I mean, I'm assuming there's some sort of implied storyline.
I'm assuming so.
There was a movie a few years ago. It was like Planet Earth or something where it was just watching animals.
Yeah,
I can't remember what the thing was called.
But that was real.
But there felt like there was a storyline of watching the
Yeah, but there are also
animals
real animals.
Exactly.
Yeah, exactly. So real animals, so you can, you know, kind of understand this is heightened. And the reason why people are walking out is not because there's no dialogue or narration to kind of try to put you in the right direction for a story. Instead, they're being grossed out because of the fact that it shows them going through their day, including them graphic depictions of them basically every possible bodily function. There is them like defecating. There's them like trying to mate, excreting, hunting, gathering, and people are just being like, I don't need to see Jesse Eisenberg dressed up as a Sasquatch taking a dump.
Did they even at least add, you know, some people in the Pacific Northwest, like, trying to find them, or, hey, I see one?
No,
there's no humans at all.
No, it's just, like, natural sound, and it's just these Sasquatch going through their day-to-day life. It's like a day in the life of Sasquatch. And so, yeah, people are walking. It doesn't... I've heard, you know, the buzz was, oh, how avant-garde... But this doesn't appeal to me at all. And I usually am willing to give things, you know, some kind of leeway or whatever to see what they're about. But because I'd like Jesse Eisenberg. I think he usually does pretty good stuff. But, yeah, I don't know if I'll be seeing Sasquatch Sunset anytime
according
soon.
According to IMDb, it got a nomination at the South by Southwest Festival, though.
Oh, okay.
From the audience.
Oh, wow. So some audience enjoyed it. Others walking out in droves. So we'll see what happens. It comes out next week, actually. So if you want to see a Sasquatch take a dump.
I don't.
I had enough of Sasquatch from Harry and the Hendersons. Yep.
Worse and worse.
Not only for the quality of the program, but the quality of your headphones. You poor
SOB.
I'm fine.
I'm past it already.
All right, good. I won't bring up old wounds. It is Mike and Molson with you here on WMAY this Friday, April 12th. Yesterday, news broke right after we got off air of the passing of O.J. Simpson at the age of 76. From his family, he succumbed to his battle with cancer. He's surrounded by his children and grandchildren when he died on Wednesday. They made the announcement yesterday. When it comes to OJ, normally people say, oh, don't speak ill of the dead. Is it okay to speak ill of this particular dead?
Yeah. And that's certainly the way it's playing out. I mean, it's very interesting to, you know, those of us, you've got a whole generation of people who just know it's this guy who murdered somebody, who was famous once, murdered somebody, and the trial.
Allegedly, as everyone likes to say, allegedly murdered. I think we all know.
I apologize. No. Please don't sue me, dead OJ.
Yes. Don't want the dead lawyer police coming in and serving us.
And then obviously there are people our age who knew him as a football player and as a movie star, and then that thing happened.
Right.
And then there's, yeah, just the weird divide that happened in 1994 when the trial ends. He's found not guilty, and some people in society went, that's a bunch of BS, and some people in society said, right on, man, that's the way it goes. And it really, to my take, hasn't changed much.
No. And part of it, too, is, you know, you mentioned the legacy of originally as Norberg from, you know, Police Squad and everything, right, and the very successful football player. But then it was the first time I can remember within the 24-hour news cycle of where programming just cut. And you went to this live news event of the white Bronco. Mm-hmm. Like, everyone just remembered. Yeah. Like, and that kind of changed the way news kind of covered things.
Was there an NBA Finals game going
on? Yes. It was the Knicks and the Rockets mm-hmm. just sitting there minding my own business.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, they cut away to cover this. And it kind of changed the game when it comes to, people were intrigued. The whole world was kind of locked in on this, on the Bronco. And then to your point, the televised of the trial to the point where, remember Mike Myers as Judge Ito on Saturday Night Live? Like, it was in the national consciousness. And you're right. I remember when that verdict was read. I was at college. It's like the second week in college. And you're right. There was, when that verdict was read throughout the floor of the dorm, there were some cheers and there were boos. And I don't, to your point, I don't know if the opinion changed much over the years, even though he was found in a civil lawsuit to be liable and owes all this money to the Goldman family.
And let's not forget, went to jail for stealing.
For stealing from the hotel.
His former property,
Right, from a hotel. Yeah. So when it comes,
and holding a guy at gunpoint. But no, I'm sure
he's great. Yeah,
didn't happen at all.
Yeah, exactly. No, he never murdered anyone whatsoever. Someone said.
But this is, I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
It's so fascinating to me, though, because, it is, a lot of us do just have that gross feeling about him. I was like, dude, man, this guy skirted it pretty, got off pretty easy. And there was just a lot of that yesterday when you're looking at X and Facebook and everything. People still have that feeling. And my thought was, there's somebody in Los Angeles right now who every year has to prepare the in memoriam for the Academy Awards, and they have to make a decision.
Well, not only
somebody that, has to make a decision.
Not only that, but like the NFL Hall of Fame, right?
Well, yeah, whatever. Did they keep him in the Hall of Fame?
But I'm just saying, like,
what do you do with that?
How do you handle all that? I mean, it's a complicated situation. But like I said, as much as don't speak ill of the dead, I think there's a lot of people who are throwing that out the window, and rightfully so. When it comes to OJ, I think the best kind of meme that I saw posted was he can finally rest easy as now he'll have met the killer. he's finally found the killer. So, yeah, that news broke yesterday. And it was just, to your point, it was an interesting dichotomy to watch social media react of the pure vitriol from some. But yet there is still that, I think it's a more minority of individuals who...
Yeah, it is. I think the bulk of the country believes that he was guilty. And there was definitely a racial component there.
That's very true.
Los Angeles went upside down after that verdict was announced.
Yeah.
And there's still a lot of that. And it's fascinating. 30 years later.
Yeah, that's true. It's
He was our age when he was going through all that stuff?
I get he's 76 when he died.
So he was 51, yeah.
Yeah, something along those lines. Yeah. Now I'm going to move on quickly. I don't know how I feel about all of that, Nordberg.
Godspeed, Juice, wherever you're going.
I have a feeling I know where he's going.
By the way, USA Today, their first interview was with Cato Kaelin. Remember that cat?
Oh, yeah. I saw that, too, where one of the highlights of the interview was he thinks that he did it, but he hopes he's found God or made peace with God or something.
He was that weird surfer dude that was living in a guest house.
Yes.
Heard the whole thing go down.
Yeah.
But he was just like an unlikely star that came, probably, just that he kind of had that early reality star.
Yes.
He's famous for nothing other than he was just famous
for being there.
And by the way, we wouldn't have the Kardashians had it not been for the OJ trial.
That's true, right? Very true. Yeah. That's part of the interview there, too. Someone saying how he boasted, OJ had boasted about that. So, yes, as far as the rule of don't speak ill of the dead, I think if you do in this case, people will give you a pass.
All good.
Yes. We'll take a break. When we come back, they've actually done research. God, everything is goofed.
Everything that's on the radio right now is going to be on Mike Quimby's.
Yes, exactly. Until we can actually, I don't know. It just won't hang. The phone won't hang up on people. It's absolutely ridiculous. Oh, there we go. All right. Ta-da. Welcome to the ridiculousness that is Mike and Molson on this Friday.
5 years and I figured it out.
Yeah, Friday, April 12th. Boy, it's almost like it's a Friday the 13th with the between the headphones and the phone. So, yes, apologies to Mike Quimby.
Yeah. He's going to have a voicemail of us going, what the F is going on here? Stupid effing thing. Can't effing hang up the effing phone.
He may have 8 minutes of us just swearing. He got his own personal Mike and Molson Too Good for Radio podcast.
Yeah, we don't usually get mad either.
No, we don't, but I just could, because then he tried to call back in, but I couldn't answer it because of the fact that, oh, good Lord. All right, we're moving on. We'll try to get in contact with Mr. Quimby later on.
I love that that's on his wall. I hope he saves that forever.
I hope he plays it for other people going, you're never going to guess. Have you heard those two jokers on the radio? Listen to the voicemail. They're
usually so jovial and happy, but man, they really just...
They snapped real fast.
It's just
a
telephone.
Good Lord. All right, Well, I'll try to reset here. 217-629-7970. Mike Quimby, if you're listening, go ahead and call back in. Maybe we'll take your call.
Sure, why not?
Don't listen to that voicemail. Just immediately delete it. So have you ever gone to the grocery store? I think we all have at one point or the other. Gone to the grocery store hungry. It's, everyone always says don't ever do it. But now we have the numbers to back it up why you should.
Yeah, which I think I always thought was... an old wives' tale that actually, but it makes sense because everything looks good and you probably do buy more, but it sounds like there's numbers to back it up.
Yes, they have found out that if you go to the grocery store hungry, according to this poll, that the average person will fork out an extra $26 per trip.
Wow, $26.
If you go there hungry, because to your point, you're just like, that looks good. Yeah, the poll of 2,000 Americans found that most people make two grocery runs per week with a budget of $162. But more than three quarters of respondents admitted they're more likely to blow their budget if they shop while hungry. And I guess at 217-629-7970, have you ever gone hungry? And what has been the purchase that you got home and thought, why did I buy this? It looked good at the store. But you get home and you're like, I don't really need this.
Right.
Why, in fact, did I buy this?
What am I going to do with this pork loin?
Right, exactly. Yeah, it's things that you purchase. Like, I know for me, in those situations, it's usually on, like, the chips aisle.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, I'm not normally a chips guy or whatever, but I will notice that I'm like, why the hell did I buy these, like, spicy barbecue kettle chips that I never will eat? But I was hungry when I was there. I'm like, oh, those look good. And I immediately grabbed them, and I didn't even think about price.
Have you, in your adult life, mastered buying the appropriate amount of groceries that you need? Or do you find yourself throwing stuff away?
I usually do an okay job as far as, for the most part. The place, where it goes awry is produce.
Mm, no, yeah.
I sometimes overestimate the amount of salad right. or the amount of, like, berries that I'm going to eat within the week. I'm right. like, oh, my God, these grapes look great, and they're on sale. I'm going to buy 18 tons of grapes, right. not realizing.
That's what I mean. Yeah.
And it's like, and I'm just going to, you know, I'll go home and eat these grapes, and then you go home and you're like,
you forget you have grapes.
Right. That's the worst. Also, I don't know if I've mastered the ability to put the groceries away in the correct position to remind myself that I purchased that particular product, because inevitably it will be that situation. Like, oh, you know, you'll look for a snack.
Right.
And you'll go, oh, damn it. I can't believe I didn't eat this. I totally forgot I had bought them earlier on.
I mean, I don't know what the stats are. I mean, we've seen them from time to time of the amount of food that we throw away. And I'm guilty of it, too. And I just, you know, you think back to our, I don't know, Depression-era grandparents or something.
Oh, good, yeah.
And you go, here we are in this land, literally a land of plenty. I mean, there is plenty. There is more plenty than we could possibly want.
Yeah.
And then it just, you know, it's, just give it to the raccoons.
Right, exactly. The raccoons can have it. They said about 6 in 10 people say they're also likely to forget about their health goals when their stomach is. So, like, you may be trying to live clean and be on keto, and you go to the grocery store and you're hungry, and the next thing you know, it's just all, like, ding-dongs and ho-hos. 217-629-7970, the phone number. Hi, you're on WMAY.
You know, it's funny. You talk about buying food. When the kids were home and I was feeding 6 people a day, or, you know, it was really easy for me to manage the groceries, and I would have enough. I'd buy enough to last a week, and I was pretty good at it, planning meals and everything. And now that it's just me and my wife, I seem to overcook a lot.
Yeah,
oh, sure.
I haven't figured out how to scale back yet.
I've not mastered how much spaghetti to put in the pot.
It's always more than it is.
It's still a full box.
Right.
You open the box, you just got to throw it all in. That's what you do. But the dogs have been eating well, though.
There you go.
Well, good. It's not going to waste.
They're doing a lot better nowadays. You know, instead of cleaning up scraps, they'll actually get, you know, a chunk of meat.
Not a bad
one.
Yeah,
that's a struggle. And the other thing is getting the kids to commit when you invite them over for dinner.
Right.
So you know how much to bake.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
You cook for 5 and 6 show up. You know, you're like, well, okay, I guess I'm not eating as much as I thought. But, oh, well.
Yeah.
Have a good day.
You too. Appreciate the phone call. Yeah, I can imagine after years of doing it one way, trying to scale back to smaller amounts when you're just, because a lot of times, too, I don't know about you, muscle memory will take over at the grocery store, and I'll go. And it just, you purchase things even though you don't really need them at that time.
Yeah.
I know I'm on this aisle. I know I usually buy this product, and I just buy it, even though then I go home and go, well, son of a bee, I just bought it. I don't need it again.
I have 4 of those canisters of baking powder.
Why?
Because I always think I don't have, if I'm thinking about making something, it's like, I bet I don't have baking powder. Because I can't remember the last time I ever used or bought it. So I buy another one, and then I put it in the pantry where the cooking stuff goes. It's like, oh, there's already, you know, 3 other baking powders sitting there. I will have baking powder in my will to my children because there's no reason for, it's absolutely ridiculous.
I tend to do that a lot of times with cream cheese, like for bagels.
Yeah.
I'm just like, oh, Dad, you know, I buy the bagels. I go, oh, I probably need cream cheese. And then the next thing I know, it's like I could.
Barbecue sauce is another one that I've bought several bottles.
I do that.
So it's no way I have barbecue sauce at home.
I do that too.
Yeah.
There's like, and it's like all the different varieties too. I don't know why I change it up.
Salad dressing.
It's like KC Masterpiece is in there with Heinz and like Sweet Baby Ray's. And I'm like, why do I need this much? Do you grocery shop with a list?
No.
Okay, because only 56% grocery shop of the list, and of those 56, 79% who do say they're less likely to overspend because they have the list.
You stay on track. Yeah,
the problem is sometimes with me is I make the list, but I never bring the pen to cross off the list. Mm-hmm. So the amount of times I then backtrack or I have to stop. I hate when I have to stop in the middle of the aisle and pull out my list to think or remember.
That's a good point,
if I went through the list before.
The list is never in the same order that the store is in.
I try to do that now, but it never works to where, and have you ever had this moment? And 217-629-7970 is a phone number, talking about grocery shopping here. Have you ever done it to where you think you're done, and then you go, oh, damn it, I have to go back and get this thing?
Yeah.
And in your mind, it's the worst thing ever, because you're like, I'm so far away from that one thing. Do I really need that one thing as much as I think I need that one thing?
I sit and marvel, you know, back to the wastage thing. Sometimes my brain goes on one of those weird math, you know, like in the movies when somebody's, you know, they start seeing numbers swirl in front of their head. And because I'll look at like the bananas. And what do you suppose in a grocery store? There's like a, you know, you walk into the grocery store, there's probably like 150 bananas there, right?
There's a lot of bananas usually.
And I sit there and I go, all right, it's Tuesday. There's 150 bananas in this one store. There's what, 10 grocery stores in the immediate area, and then there's more, you know, then there's grocery stores in St. Louis, and there's grocery stores in Dallas, and you start to go, my God, where do these bananas come from? It's not like corn, where it's just, you know, there's more corn for days. Bananas.
That's,
you know?
Yeah.
Think about, I don't know, where do we even get bananas from?
I want to say.
Where do they come from?
I want to say South America, right?
That many?
There's a lot of bananas. I mean,
we got them from Hawaii. I thought they were all in Hawaii.
No, I think they're
you're probably right. I think we get some from Mexico.
I think we get some South America bananas, and then maybe Hawaii bananas.
That's a lot of bananas.
But to your point, I'm sure across the world, they think the same thing about corn. How does all this corn show up? How are we getting all this corn? And it's to them, their bananas are their corn.
Like if you're ever in California, I was in Los Angeles in January, and I'm literally walking on the sidewalk, and I see what I think is just junk on the sidewalk. It's like, what the hell happened here? And what it was just oranges falling off trees.
Oh, yeah.
Going uneaten. There was just oranges. There were oranges just laying on the sidewalk.
There is somebody.
I have no frame of reference to that. That's so weird to me.
I'm with you.
Oranges?
There is somebody in our neighborhood.
I love oranges.
I like the juice. I don't know if I love oranges.
I like oranges.
But you should have grabbed them.
Like, look at all these oranges.
I know, right. Well,
just on the sidewalk, Mike.
I did the same thing when we were down in Florida.
Right.
Driving around, and there's a random orange tree.
Like, grab a lime. In Florida, there's a lime on a bush.
And I was,
weird.
We were driving with friends, and it took all I could to not stop them and be like, we got to go get the orange.
I don't even know what the equivalent is. Like, okay, we have an apple orchard, maybe. And maybe that's the equivalent of it here. But not like, it's not like they're lining the sidewalk like decorative trees like we have. You know what I'm saying?
I feel what you...
They were oranges, Mike.
There's somebody in our neighborhood who has, I want to say, are peaches from trees?
Yeah, peaches come from trees.
And it was like, it was in bloom and there was just a bunch of peaches in their lawn. And I was like, why wouldn't you just gather these peaches? Like, do you have no time for peaches?
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, people pay good money for peaches. What are you doing just letting them just sit there raccoons?
We're just a couple of months away from Calhoun peaches.
And
you know how I feel about Calhoun peaches.
I know. You feel like Kramer feels about Calhoun peaches. God. So, but anyway,
there were oranges laying around.
Yeah, just.
And where do bananas come from? We'll talk about that next here on WMAY.
Let's talk produce Saturdays on WMAY because it can't be any different than the rest of the lineup. So, yes, we'll take a break. We come back. No, there is a real. It is Mike and Molson with you here on WMAY and this Friday, April 12th. Glad we were able to get a hold of Mike Quimby. I forgot to tell him not to listen to that voicemail, but we'll see what happens. 217-629-7970 is the phone number. This may be the creepiest Am I the A-hole I've ever seen in the history of Reddit. And there's a lot of history to Reddit. So I'm going to lay it on you, Johnny, and the listener to chime in. There's a pretty obvious A-hole in this situation, and it's not the individual who's writing this. The individual writes in, I'm a 19-year-old female, and I've been living with my best friend, she's 20, for the last 6 months or so. We've been friends since forever. I know her older brother, who's 26, pretty well, too, because I'd see him when I was younger at my friend's house and when he babysat us sometimes and drive us places. I've known him like my whole life. Here's where it gets super creepy. It was my birthday a month ago, and he bought me lingerie, which I thought was really weird, so I just put it in my drawer, because it is. Uh-huh. You can't just buy a friend lingerie. I threw it away a few days ago because I'm never going to wear it, and it makes me uncomfortable because he purchased it. He was here earlier at the apartment, and me and my friend were talking to him. He asked me if I wore it yet, and before I could answer, my friend asked if it was the lingerie that I had thrown away in the trash. I was going to lie.
Oh, I'm so glad that happened.
I was going to lie, but she already told him what color it was, so he knew it was the one that he bought me. He started yelling at me for throwing it away.
Was that the lingerie that had the gift wrap on it with the pretty bow and the happy birthday card?
Right. So he starts yelling at her because he says it cost him a lot of money. I apologized, but said it made me feel really uncomfortable that he bought it for me. He told me he was just being friendly and thought I'd appreciate the gift.
Being friendly.
Okay. First of all, no friend of the opposite sex is being friendly buying that particular gift.
Right.
That's not how that works.
Well, and this doesn't sound, I mean, unless they qualified it by, you know, because women always have that one gay friend who buys nice things. They've got a good mindset about
right.
that, and it legitimately isn't creepy.
Right, right. But that doesn't seem to be the case here.
No.
He told me he was just being friendly and thought I appreciated a gift. He accused me of thinking he's some kind of perv and kept yelling at me until I went crying into my room. Yeah, you are kind of a perv with that gift. I hated the way he looked at me when he gave me the lingerie. Like, it grossed me out so much, I don't think he's a bad person or anything, but it made me super uncomfortable. I didn't want to be reminded of the way he looked at me every time I saw it. That's why I got rid of it. I didn't tell him at all because it would have upset him. My friend said I overreacted in throwing it away because he was only trying to be nice. Am I the jerk for throwing away the gift?
No.
At 217-629-7970. I don't think in the least she's the jerk at all. I think he is the jerk. That is something that I think you have to run by someone first before you come with that as a gift.
Now, look, she could very well have received the gift, gone back to him and said, hey, look, I'm sure you were trying to be nice. This is a little over the line or a little inappropriate. I don't feel comfortable with this. Thank you for the thought. I can't accept this. Probably would have doused it a little bit. I mean, it would still kind of sting the guy a little bit, but.
But you, to your point, you know what? I think probably better served.
Yeah.
In that situation, a couple things, because that would have then.
Did you wear it yet?
That's what I'm going to say.
Come on.
That is where you go. Okay.
Yeah.
Had she done what you suggested and diffused the situation pretty darn quick, maybe he gets the hint that, okay, not an appropriate gift. Then to then ask her if she'd want, because here's my biggest fear.
Because then can I wear it next?
No, my biggest fear is if you did, how'd you like it? And could you send me a picture?
Well, yeah.
I'm not trying to be accusatory in nature of this particular gentleman, but it seems awful weird, one, to buy your sister's friend that mm-hmm. particular gift just seems weird. And the fact that you've known this person since they were a little bit younger, it just also adds another weird factor.
Right.
So I don't blame her in the least for wanting to get rid of it. I don't think she's a jerk. I think he's misguided in his purchase of the gift. I don't know if he's a jerk per se. I don't know if I would project that upon him, but it is awful. There's a lot of ick to me in this.
You're being very generous by not projecting that onto him because you could be right, but can you ever imagine in your wildest dreams, a female friend?
No.
And you slip into Victoria's Secret.
No, I
think she'd like this.
It's difficult enough to make that purchase when you're in a relationship with somebody.
Right.
Right? To go into that store for a decent amount of individuals, to go in that store and to pick out something, it's tough enough for someone who you're going to see it in guaranteed, and buying something like that, to do it as a quote unquote friend for your birthday, it just seems, and 26 and 19 doesn't seem like a lot, but it is. The 7 year gap as well.
And of all the weird things in this story, that's the
least weird. But also to then give that, knowing that it's going to get back to your sister that you gave her friend lingerie. And the fact that the sister throws her under the bus is a little is also a little bit weird in that situation. Like, you mean the one that the orange one with the frills or whatever that was just in the trash?
No, you know what? I disagree. I think the sister solved the problem. She had to somebody had to rip the Band-Aid.
Gotcha.
Because the friend could have said, "Oh yeah, it was really nice. Thank you." And still kicked it down the road.
I didn't think about that.
I think the sister probably just said, "All right, let's burn this to the ground," because
it's getting weirder. Of she found a way for it to be addressed innocuously enough to where the situation has to be taken care of and boundaries have to be made. So you're right. Maybe the friend was just like, "This is my opportunity. I don't want to keep hearing it from both sides of him bugging me. Does she like me?" And my roommate going, "Your brother's weird."
Yeah.
So let's just throw it out there right now on the table and get it all taken care of. So let it be a lesson. Unless you're in a relationship, lingerie is not a good gift for a man to buy a woman for her birthday. Unless you're in a relationship with said woman. As a rule of thumb. So yes. Just weird, and you are not a jerk, and you're perfectly acceptable with throwing that away, because I don't think it's something you can even give to Goodwill. I don't think they're going to want that.
Even if it's still in the package.
Yeah, I don't think they want that at all. It is Mike and Molson with you here on WMAY. We'll take our final break of the 7 o'clock hour. We come back, Daredevils. It is Mike Molson with you here on WMAY on this Friday, April 12th. 217-629-7970 is the phone number. We have a fascination as a culture with the daredevils doing all their different stunts. And this is a very sad story because this did not go well. Okay. This particular daredevil no longer with us, will not be doing any more stunts. But I'm wondering if our fascination is that of kind of with the same of race car driving of... We watch it because we kind of want to see the crash.
That's Bonick. It's exciting. Yeah.
And so 217-629-7970 is the phone number. If you care to admit that, because I think that's part of our fascination is it going wrong. Let me introduce you to this particular individual who is 21-year-old Colorado skier. He attempted to perform a high-risk skiing stunt by trying to clear the width of Highway 40.
Okay.
So he's going to go down, go over Highway 40. Unfortunately, this is according to police, unfortunately, he lacked the necessary speed and distance and subsequently landed on highway pavement.
Gravity won again.
Yeah, not great. The county coroner's office identified the man as Dallas LeBeau. Now, that sounds like a daredevil.
Yeah.
The jump LeBeau attempted near the Burthard Pass Summit west of Denver was 40 feet. Friends said LeBeau loved to ski and often urged others to take up the sport. Quote, he wanted to do things that nobody else had done. He always said his birthday was the same day as Evel Knievel, which is why he attempted this particular stunt that led to his ultimate demise.
And what do we remember about Evel Knievel?
Never that he completed everything, just...
It's like, wow, that guy was really good at jumping over... It's that slow motion film of him bouncing all over the Bellagio.
Just
smacking into the fountain and is, looking like a rag doll.
Or when he shot that rocket that didn't even make it halfway across the canyon.
We got to pull up that Evel Knievel song.
But yeah, we do. Hi, you're on WMAY.
Hey, am I wrong for when I watch bull riding that I'm always rooting for the bull?
No, that's you're on the right side.
Clip one of them clowns with one of his horns. Am I wrong?
No, you're on the right side of history.
You're in the right. Just like when we watch these daredevils, I appreciate the phone call. Just when we watch these daredevils, you're not wrong for cheering for the bull in that instance, or when you watch a NASCAR race to hope that maybe there's a pileup. And you're not wrong in these. The fascination we have is to your point. We want to see the wreckage.
Yeah. And I mean, look, yeah, what do you want to see in football? Yeah, the run is fun, but man, somebody just gets clobbered and stepped on. And I mean, right. that seems to be when all our attention goes to the TV. And yeah, I mean, look, Daredevils, that's not new. We've had circuses forever, and somebody always tries to do something incredible.
Let me ask you this. Do you feel like Evel Knievel would have been as famous as he was had he completed all of those? Or would we have been more like, ho-hum, he did it.
Yeah,
but because of the slow-motion footage and the fact that he was able to walk away from it and kept doing it and still be with us, was that more of what drew us to him because of the fact that he was kind of this underdog that never really succeeded, but yet never let that stop him to the point where he wanted to continue on until he got one and was able to complete it?
One of the things I learned recently about Evel Knievel that I didn't realize came up in a documentary, and I think it was his son who told the story, that he never did any calculations. There was no consideration of the angle of the ramp, the speed of the bike, the wind that day. He just kind of eyeballed it and said, that's about right.
You can't do that.
And so he had no, you know, there was nothing in his brain about, oh, I need to be going 88 miles an hour or this thing's not going to make it. And he just kind of felt it out and said, here I go. No wonder you bounced all over downtown Las Vegas like an idiot.
Yeah, you probably need to run at least a rudimentary math to be like,
get out a protractor, for God's sake.
Or something. Hi, you're on WMAY.
Hey, guys. A little bit different for me. What I really like watching is the almost fail.
Yeah.
Okay.
Like, the guy that fails, just another loser. The almost fail, hey, that guy pulled it off. I'm impressed.
Yeah.
All right. I appreciate that. I can see that where it's like watching those videos where the people start slipping on the ice. You're like, wait for it. And instead of laughing at the fall, you're impressed by the ability to stay on balance.
What was it? The grandkids of the Flying Walendas did that thing where they a tightrope from Marina Tower across the Chicago River.
Yes.
And, you know, it was a big event and it was live. And again, yeah, why are we watching? We're watching because
you never know.
They might slip.
Exactly.
What's wrong with us?
Right. And especially like, oh, they're not using a net.
Yeah.
We're like, ooh, no net. Even better. Who knows what will happen?
That may just gonna get ugly.
That may be split. Flat. All right, got to tune in for that. Hi, you're on WMAY.
Good morning.
Hey.
I think all three of us grew up with Wide World of Sports.
Yes.
So it's ingrained in our head, the agony of defeat. I mean, we can all right now picture that guy on the ski jump.
Yep.
Just going down.
Going right off the edge.
Just barreling into the poor spectators that are sitting there. Appreciate the phone call.
Yeah,
yes,
you're right.
Yeah, it was ingrained into us that, yes, the thrill of victory was fine, but the way McKay really hit and the agony of defeat.
Yeah,
and
is why you're here.
Exactly. And you just see that poor guy somersaulting down and just running into people and the skis flying
skis
all over.
Skis fly. He takes off half of a banner on the side of the jump.
We're like, oh, my God, that could happen today.
I want to see that.
Screw the Globetrotters. Go back to the skiing guy.
Do it again.
Yeah, do it again. Do it again.
Now do a flip.
Yes, please. So, appreciate the phone calls there. But yes, Dallas LeBeau. Welcome to Hour 3 of Nonsense on WMAY. It is Mike Emolson. And we have some celebrity birthdays today. These are going to be a little difficult. These are some tricky ones for the guru of celebrity birthday guessing ages correctly. You're pretty good within 5 years.
All right, we'll see.
So we have quite the eclectic mix. Some may, I don't think anyone will have to be explained. I think a majority of people know who they are. But we'll start with the one that people may not know who they are. Art Alex Akis, who is the lead singer of Everclear.
Oh, okay.
Now, he's an interesting one. He's going to be supremely difficult because Everclear got famous later than you would expect them to in his career arc.
Okay.
So when I read this morning, I thought to myself, I didn't realize he was that much older than me.
63?
62.
Okay.
Well done. Up next, John Kay of Steppenwolf. Born to be Wild.
Yeah. 87.
And, he's only 80.
Oh, I overshot the runway.
Yeah. Sorry. Now, this one threw me for a loop, too. Herbie Hancock. Remember Herbie? Mm-hmm. Like the early days of MTV. Herbie Hancock had Rocket. That was his song, right?
Yep.
And it was all like he was way ahead of his time because it was all robots, legs dancing around and everything else.
Yeah, I forget who the artist was who made that. It was an art installation.
Oh, was it?
Of body parts.
Yeah,
it was a very strange video. But Herbie had a jazz career prior to that unusual, unlikely hit.
Right.
So I'm going to put Herbie at 82.
84 for Herbie Hancock today. That to me threw me a little bit because I was not, I'm at that age. I just thought that was his first hit. I'm like, oh, look at this guy.
Yeah,
this
is very unusual.
Yeah, exactly. But Forerunner, I don't think without Herbie Hancock, I don't think the one guy who made Axel F theme from Beverly Hills Cop is able, has a career.
Probably not.
Herbie Hancock walked so he could run. We'll go to actor Andy Garcia. How old is Andy Garcia today? From the Oceans movie and various other things. He's a tough one.
I'm having trouble placing that one. 59?
He's 68.
68, okay.
We will move on to, this is the one that kind of threw me a little bit too, actress Shannon Doherty. I assume she's had a rough go of it with her battle with cancer, but I assumed when she was at the zenith of her career that she was older than I would have expected her to be. But how old is Shannon Doherty today?
64.
She is 53.
Oh, sorry, Shannon.
Oh, she's going through so much, and then you say that. So they say 53.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of place her in early to mid-90s. Am I?
Yeah, that's just the thing I thought. I'm like, early 90s, so when 90210 was around.
Okay,
so it's like,
yeah, so she was pretty young when she started that.
Yeah, right. So I was like, because I thought, watching that, You get these celebrity birthdays later on, and as I, when I watch 90210, because my mom and my sister are into it, it's like 92, I'm like 14, 15 years old, I assume those individuals, while playing high schoolers, were 24, 25.
Right.
I didn't think, oh, she's 20 years old. Like, that actually, worked out. So, moving on to actor Ed O'Neill. Al Bundy and Jay Pritchett from Modern Family. Talk about a guy who is in two giant
big
hits. Two big shows.
68.
78. Ed, you're having a rough run today.
I'm good at this.
Normally you are. Actress Claire Danes.
Oh, my gosh. No clue.
Because she's in
45.
Yeah, 45 for Claire Danes. And that was another one where that made more sense to me when I read 45. My so-called life hit right when I, I was right in that, and I just never got into that show, with Jared Leto and A.J. Langer and all that kind of stuff. That was a huge show in its day that everyone's like, oh, I'm an angsty teen. I watch my so-called life.
Right.
But I never really got into it, but it makes sense. And finally, the last celebrity birthday today that we will quiz you on, one David Letterman celebrating a birthday today. How old is David Letterman? This one threw me off, too.
Did it? He's 73.
77 for David. For David Letterman. Talk about a guy who just had an amazing career. To this day, and knew when to walk away. Right? Didn't hang around. Didn't overstay his welcome.
Yeah.
Just decided I've had enough. I've done enough. I've set kind of the stand. I mean, after Johnny Carson, I would say probably Letterman set the standard, right?
Yeah, I mean, Carson had a 30-year run. Letterman had about a 30-year run. Conan, 28 years, I think.
Yeah.
So there's something about right around that point where they go, this is probably about all, unless you're Jay Leno and you just keep coming back and you can't stop.
Yeah, Letterman handled it with much more grace than Leno did. Leno,
kind of like O.J. Simpson. We all still kind of have a weird feeling about Leno.
Yes, we really do.
Yeah,
hey,
kind of gross.
Yeah.
Hey, you gotta get out of curry.
Look at me. Yeah, I'm gonna go out in the street and ask people questions.
I wear jean shirts.
That was, I always felt with him wanting to stick around, he always felt like he was second fiddle to Letterman, and he always had something to prove. It's kind of the vibe I got when it came to Jay Leno.
You can't take away the successful run he had, when it finally locked in, and led the ratings in the late night wars, but it never quite you never quite felt like you knew the guy and you know, wanted him to come out and hang out and or something.
Right.
There was no, there was really no vulnerability with Leno.
Correct.
So there was something between you and him. And guys like Letterman and Conan show you who they are, or at least a version of themselves.
Correct. Yeah.
And so you feel this sort of connection. And Carson too.
Didn't they have, and I'll have to check Max when I get home, but didn't HBO do the Late Night Wars, like a documentary about that whole thing? I never watched it at the time. I need to maybe go back and watch it, because it was really a fascinating back and forth in the situation between those two who really didn't like each other.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And they've both made comments lately that they wish it hadn't gone down like that.
Oh, okay.
Letterman and Leno, you know, wish that it hadn't gone down like that. And I don't know how Conan feels about Leno. He's the one who really got the short stick there.
Right, yeah.
You know, you sit there and go, wait, he actually was the host of The Tonight Show for a couple of months. You know?
Right, but right,
and you forget about that.
Yeah, before they pulled
that he was there and then he wasn't. And you go, that kind of sucks.
Yeah.
He was just on Idiot Jimmy Fallon.
Yes, his first appearance on The Tonight Show.
That's weird to me.
It was the first appearance since he was unceremoniously like kicked off The Tonight Show. So kudos to Conan for putting aside all the stuff and appearing for the goofball Jimmy Fallon.
Yep.
There's your celebrity birthdays today. We'll take a break. We come back. I found a list of 90s movies.
Hamburger.
There's something from the 90s that still holds up.
That's right.
It is Mike and Molson with you here on WMAY on this Friday, April 12th. One of our career achievements, tracking down Hamburger Jones. 217-629-7970 is the phone number. Found this list from Collider of 10 movies from the 90s that never gets old.
Okay.
And so we'll go through this list, and if you have some of the movies that, you know, sometimes when you revisit those movies from the 90s, what they're saying is they're dated. They're very much a product of their time.
And you feel like maybe some of these on the list?
I feel that way. So we'll hold up. Yeah, we'll go through the list from 10 to 1. I don't think they ranked them in any particular order, but we'll just go that way because number 10 is the one I have most umbrage with. And I think a lot of people will agree.
Mike's got umbrage.
Yes.
Stay tuned for that.
Stay tuned for more umbrage. So number 10 on the list of 90s movies that never get old, Forrest Gump comes in at number 10. I've heard some people say it has not aged as well as you would think it did.
Hmm.
Just because of the fact that it's just a fast forward of history with Forrest Gump in the background.
Well, I know you've got an issue with that
big
movie.
Time. Oh, I can't see.
Because what, did it knock a Tarantino movie out of the running or something?
It beat Pulp Fiction Best Picture.
Okay. And that's,
you're trying to tell me this schlock is better than Pulp Fiction?
See,
get the hell out of here
for
that.
This is Mike's OJ anger coming out.
Yes, exactly. This is me.
I'm still mad about this.
I'm still upset about this this damn movie. Hi, you're on WMAY.
I can't argue with you, Mike.
Oh.
I mean, my umbrage would be with it, too. So,
oh, okay. Well, thank you.
You know,
a fellow in umbrage, EJ. Thank you, Irby Jr.
Exactly. I mean, you could just, you know, it'd be Mike Umbridge and Johnny Molson.
There we go. Yeah. Perfect.
Whatever. But my thoughts would be The Matrix and Waterworld.
That never get old?
See, I don't think The Matrix ever got old.
Well, I'll give you The Matrix. Yeah, The Matrix now, but especially with AI coming into the conversation.
I don't think anybody liked Waterworld when it was out.
Dude, I don't know why, I have never stopped liking it.
Okay.
All right.
And it's, I guess, because especially now in this week, if you follow any of video game to TV shows, Fallout came out.
Uh-huh, I saw
so
that.
That's awesome. And it's basically kind of like that. It was the pre-Fallout because it was like a post-apocalyptic or, you know, the polar caps melting,
world came
to an end kind of thing.
And the postman has to, go across all the different...
The postman, yes, exactly.
So, all right. Waterworld down on the list. Appreciate the phone call there, EJ Irby Jr. And I appreciate you joining me in umbrage for Forrest Gump.
But so that aside, I think Forrest Gump is still a solid movie? I think it is. I think people still enjoy the movie.
Okay, these are 90s movies that never get old, according to Collider. Number 9 on the list, Shawshank Redemption.
Yeah.
It's one of those ones that everyone always talks about. It's on AMC all the time, but you can't not stop watching Shawshank Redemption.
It's a Spielberg movie.
So I agree with that. Number 8 on the list, Jurassic Park. I will totally agree with that. Another one everyone always remembers, and you can still go back. When you see that water glass, then the ripple in it, you know, ooh, bad things are happening. Well done, so I agree with that one. Number 7 is a movie my dad watched, but I never have. It's a Western with Clint Eastwood from 1992, Unforgiven.
Yes. Yeah, that one. Yeah, that's a solid movie.
And is it?
You know,
okay.
And there's a handful of Westerns where you go, oh, okay, this is...
There is.
This is showing kind of the meat of what things were like.
It's interesting that Unforgiven makes it one, like, Westerns either hold up or they're ridiculous. Like, mm-hmm. I loved Young Guns and Young Guns 2 growing up, but those aren't Westerns that hold up.
Right.
You know, but you look at something like the movie Silverado, mm-hmm. is a Western to me that holds up. It has that element of comedy to it and everything else. Kevin Kline and Danny Glover, that has that element of timelessness to it. Number 6 on this list of 90s movies that never grow old, according to Collider, is another movie I've never seen, Braveheart. Despite all the Mel Gibson stuff, does Braveheart still hold up for people? It doesn't grow old? Can you still revisit Braveheart? I mean, we all know the line, they can take our land, but they can never take our freedom type stuff.
Yeah, I mean, and it's a movie about a point in time, so it doesn't have a 90s feel about it.
True. So it doesn't age.
It has an ancient Scotland feel. And same thing with, you know, Shawshank Redemption and the other ones we're talking about here kind of have that.
This one, I don't know. I like it. It's a guilty pleasure movie. I don't know if it's a 90s movie that never grows old, The Mummy. I mean,
I never saw it, but it does feel 90s to me when I think about it.
I mean, it's set in a different time period. It's not set in the 90s per se, so it's set more in that kind of serial kind of action adventure time frame, but it certainly feels like despite that time that it's set in, it feels a movie of its time.
Like
I don't know if in, you know, to the point of Unforgiven, to the point of Jurassic Park, that kind of stuff, you can still, 20 years from now, go back and show that movie, and it's going to have a timeless kind of feel. Yeah. The Mummy, I just don't know if it's going to feel that way. Next on the list of movies from the 90s that never grow old, Pulp Fiction comes in at number 4.
Okay.
I think that movie, because of the way it shot, the non-linear storytelling, just the filter of it gives it a feel of timelessness in and of itself. And so I would tend to agree with that. Number 3 on the list of 90s movies that never grow old, according to Collider, Silence of the Lambs.
Oh, sure.
And I think that's
I just watched that within the last couple of years, and it's still as riveting and disturbing, and it's still...
Is that Anthony Hopkins' best work, you think? A guy who has a huge career to choose from?
I mean, it's in his top 3.
It'd have to be. Yeah. I mean, just the...
He's a brilliant actor, and that's one of them.
And not only that, but knowing what you know of Anthony Hopkins as being a pretty nice guy in Hollywood, you never really hear anyone have a disparaging word about working with him, but to see him embody the evil that is Hannibal Lecter, that's impressive.
He took that character in places I don't think even the directors were expecting it to go.
Number 2, I don't know if I agree with either, of movies from the 90s that never grow old. Mission Impossible from 1996 with Tom Cruise.
That's a solid action movie.
I would agree with... Maybe it's my umbrage once again with Tom Cruise. I'm not
a
big...
Are you okay? Your umbrage is really showing
today. Between the phone call from earlier today and everything else. I guess you're right. I guess it's practical stunts for the most part, so I think that helps it hold up and never grow old, that it's not reliant upon CGI. So I can see your point in that way.
Yeah, I mean, I think, and just even as a storyline, you know, to revive this old 60s TV show and put it into a present-day action movie, I think it did its job. I think it's just a good action movie. Forget what you think about Tom Cruise and all of his nuttiness, but
not only that, but the scene of him kind of dangling there. How many times just in like, oh, they're Mission Impossible in it?
And my gosh, he's still putting versions of it out today.
Yes, he is. And number 1, I really don't know if I'd agree with this, but for the schlock value, I guess I get it. The number 1 on this list of 10 movies from the 90s that never grow old, they have Armageddon at number 1.
Oh, come on.
That's what the number 1 of 90s movies that never grow old. I don't know if I agree with that per se, but the schlock value of it.
Well, that's just it. It's fun to watch because it's ridiculous.
Correct. And you have just that scene of, spoiler alert, from the 1998 movie, but that scene where, you know, Bruce Willis and Ben Affleck are there, and you got the Aerosmith playing in the background, and that weird, creepy, you know, even creepier than buying the lingerie for a girl that's just not even you're dating, is the is the animal cracker scene with Ben Affleck and Liv Tyler, where he's got the animal cracker on her stomach, like starts going, and you're like,
And Steve Buscemi for no reason.
Because back in those days,
he just had to have him there.
And Owen Wilson had to be in there. Wow. Hi, you're on WMAY.
I'm sorry, I had to call back. Your umbrage for the second one was justified, too. I would rather do Rush Hour.
Oh, okay.
Mission Impossible.
Okay. Right. I get it.
You know, because, I mean, you know, Jackie Chan, come on. He can easily take Tom.
Yeah.
You know,
very much so.
Down. Yeah. Does his own stunts, everything like that.
Yeah.
And you've got the comedy along with it, so it doesn't need to be that serious.
Yeah.
True.
And
if Armageddon could be on this list, Rush Hour could be on the list. Exactly. I'm with you, EJ. Exactly.
There it is.
Appreciate
it. I mean, you and I, the umbrage is completely real today.
Yes, it is. Appreciate the phone call. Let's talk umbrage every Saturday morning on WMAY.
The Fugitive.
Is that from the 90s?
Every time that comes on. I think it is.
Okay, maybe like 91?
Every time that comes on, it's like, I just got to sit down and watch this. I know exactly what's going on. I don't know what it is. I cannot put my finger on what it is, but it's like, I know every sequence. It's perfectly put together. I've got to watch The Fugitive.
Interesting.
Yeah.
The one for me, it's not 90s, but I've said it many times before. And
93.
93?
Yeah.
Okay. The one that does it for me, that movie, that I, no matter how many times, and my wife hates it, Karate Kid.
Anytime
Karate Kid's on, I have to watch it. And she's like, but you've seen this a zillion. I'm like, I know I have.
Yeah.
But I have to at least get to You're the Best Around.
Yeah.
Like if I have it on and I don't get to the point of the best montage in the history of movie making, I feel incomplete.
Yeah.
But the Fugitive. So there's some 90s movies. They say for the most part, a fine list.
Good list.
But a couple of them that the word umbrage makes an appearance. We'll take a break for news when we come back. Michael J. Fox had some interesting comments about it being more difficult.
Hamburger!
Needed to lighten the mood there. That was kind of some heavy bumper music we had.
Yeah, really.
It is Mike Emolson with you here on WMAY on this Friday, April 12th. Interesting. Are you familiar with Michael J. Fox's work? He's in a movie called Back to the Future, which I know you never saw.
No, he was in I know that one TV show that he were
Family Ties.
The Republican kid.
Yeah. Alex P. Keaton.
Right.
He was also in a movie called Teen Wolf.
Do you remember Teen Wolf?
Yeah. He knew better to be in Teen Wolf 2.
Right.
He was not in that one. He said, enough of that. He's also in a movie called Frighteners. Have you seen the movie
Frighteners? No,
oh, my God. Frighteners is so good.
Is it?
He plays a guy who dupes people into thinking their house is haunted, but he can actually see spirits.
Oh, okay.
Because he had a near-death experience. And he just kind of, he's kind of this shyster guy going around or whatever. Really good movie. Frighteners. It was made by Peter Jackson, of all people.
Okay.
So check out Frighteners. You may want to check out Back to the Future, too, but, you know, whatever. Long story short, in a recent interview with People magazine, he said that it was more difficult in the 80s to not only be famous, but to achieve fame.
Well,
he said, quote, "You had to be talented. That helped." He said, "We used to bust our butts, our acting muscles, and watch other actors sit around with other actors and talk about acting and talk about it. And now you've got people who just go, who's your sweater? What's your sweater you're wearing? And what's the dance step? And you're the most famous person in the world."
He sounds like a crotchety old man.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah. I don't think he's wrong that 40 years ago, because there was just a limited number of, there just weren't that many slots, you know? You had three major networks, and you had a handful of movies that went out. You know, there just weren't that many opportunities for actors as there would be now. I mean, you know, when you consider Netflix and Peacock and Max and on down the road,
Amazon Prime.
There are plenty of opportunities to be famous within a smaller universe of people.
Okay. Yeah, it does. To me, when I first heard it, I did think of an old man yelling at the sky type thing.
But I think his final take there of, yeah, you just have to be famous by wearing fancy clothes and being an influencer. Nah, I don't think that's right.
But it is an interesting concept of what constitutes fame in 2024. I do think he has, to your point, I think he has a point on that of it's not just in acting. But fame comes from odd places now in our particular. For instance, I will take a concrete example from somebody I know. My friend Nate, who runs the Paging Mr. Morrow YouTube page. When you're out and about with him in a Disney park
Disney,
now, because that's one of his focuses of what he does, it is like someone is meeting Tom Cruise.
Right.
Or it's hard to wrap your head around, because all he has simply done is take a passion that he enjoyed, put it on the internet, and now he is, to some, the equal celebrity to a Brad Pitt, which, when you ask someone like a Michael J. Fox, I think that's what he's alluding to with that second comment of, this person's famous, but they're not really doing any. In his mind, they're not an actor, so they're not famous.
And that's true, yeah. I mean, Nate is famous in his circle of people.
Right.
Who, if he walked into the room right now, I wouldn't recognize him. You would.
Correct. And those within...
And there are people I follow on YouTube. If they walked in the room, you wouldn't recognize them.
Right.
And so that's interesting. Now, yes. Brad Pitt walks in, we all know who he is.
Correct. So there is, I think, it runs counter to Michael J. Fox's argument about fame just being readily available. There is more outlets, and there's more kind of pockets of fame and grades of fame nowadays than there was back then. It was either you're a movie star, you're a TV star, or a sports star, music. That was your categories. Now you have all those, plus YouTube, plus TikTok, maybe Instagram. And so that's an interesting kind of situation we find ourselves in nowadays in 2024 that he didn't have to deal with back then.
And look, there are legitimately good things being put out by these people who are just self-producing, and they're putting them on YouTube, or they're, just these little mini 20-minute documentary or feature things that are hyper-specific on something that you're interested in. And it's not that they're they're talking into a camera. They're really well-produced.
I'm trying to think of... it's not Yesterworld Entertainment. It's the guy, Kevin Perjurer, and I can't remember.
Oh, sure. Defunctland.
Yes. Mm-hmm. If you talk about
Perjurer
a guy...
Perjurer is amazingly talented.
Yes. Talk about... Do yourself a favor. Even if you aren't into theme parks per se, the deep dives and his production value and just how much research he puts into these projects are undeniable. He had one that you immediately wanted me to watch where it's not even... There's no actual VO. It's just music strung together with the kind of subtitles on the bottom.
He's talking about Disneyland, right?
He's talking about the making of Epcot in Disney World.
That's right.
Yeah.
It's 2.5 hours, and you can't take your eyes off of it.
Right.
And it's on YouTube.
And it just continues to flow.
Yeah. And there are, I think there's, and I think that's kind of cool that, there's no real gatekeeper of... there's not an agent or a casting director saying this gets through, that doesn't get through. You put it out there, and if people gravitate to it, it's a thing.
Mm-hmm. He went on to say, Michael J. Fox, that there's an expression I referred to when they gave me an honorary Academy Award. Someone said to me the day before, they're talking about getting this award and being famous, and they say, you're 80s famous. And he thought, wow, that's cool. 80s famous. We were different. We were tougher. We didn't have social media. We didn't have any of that crap. We were just famous, left our own resources, and it was an amazing time.
Yeah.
So it does kind of seem like he is. He's gone through a lot. So if anyone has the right to be upset about things, it's probably Michael J. Fox. But I don't think you can just poo-poo every other people as not being, not working as hard and being famous just because you may not understand the way in which they became famous in their sphere.
Yeah, I mean, if your wife or daughter follow, makeup tutorials on TikTok or something like that, I'm sure they've got people that they are their favorites, and to them they are famous, and that's I don't think that's not legitimate. People are putting work into it.
Yes, they are. So, and like I said, it's amazing just walking around. When hanging out with the amount of people just stop and you're just awestruck. But because I know him, it doesn't register with me.
Right.
But it's so interesting to see what people consider fame nowadays.
Can I tell you my elevator story real quick?
Go ahead.
So I get in the elevator at my office, and somebody gets in the elevator with me. And I say these following words. 8, please.
Okay, yeah, you're just being kind. Yeah. Consider
it. Because she was standing next to the buttons. She got in first, I got in second, and 8, please. Like, exactly how you just heard me do it.
Yeah.
8, please. And she turns to me and says, ooh, celebrity.
Wow. That's someone who must
And I didn't know if she was on the phone or if she's looking at something or I, you know, it's like, and then I look over at her, I said, pardon? She goes, that voice.
Look at you.
It's like, I mean, okay. I mean, I understand. I'm on a lot of commercials and people know my voice. And,
right.
But from eight, please.
She immediately knew.
I didn't say eight, please. And right. 68 degrees in the capital city.
Right. Along those
drive
lines.
Safely now.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
I didn't do anything. Just, like that. Just eight, please.
Eight, please.
And so it's like, you know, and it's one of those things, yes. And so people approach my daughters and say, I know who your dad is. I was like, yeah, just stop talking to my daughters. You want those?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, please don't. Come straight to the source there. Yeah. By the way, it sounds to me like that individual is a fan of the Mike and Molson Too Good for Radio podcast.
Clearly.
Yeah, that is always kind of weird where...
Want more of this voice,
yes,
boy.
Yeah, turn into that. You get nothing but a half hour of that voice saying other words besides eight, please. Yeah, that is kind of odd that, you know, I don't consider this as something that you would be famous for.
You've been approached in public.
Yeah,
and
yeah,
I've been,
exactly. Yeah, there's times when people are like, oh, that, yeah. And you just go, okay, so take that, Michael J. Fox. Yeah, are you mad about me as well?
Yeah.
You old man. We'll take our final break. We come back. Originally, I was going to wrap up with a different topic, but you brought to my attention the amount of jokes that Norm Macdonald had made over the years concerning O.J. Simpson. And I thought, yeah, this is more like it for a Friday. Little club vibe. Mike and Molson with you on WMAY. We go from the club vibe to O.J. Simpson dying. And you brought it up to me. I didn't realize in the moment.
Shame Norm didn't live to see this day.
Yeah, it is a shame. A gentleman who for years, and also too, he seems like an individual who, in Norm Macdonald, his comedic stylings, people didn't get it in its time. Mm-hmm. And now that he's no longer with us, people are revisiting it and realizing just the genius that it was. Because I know when the pantheon of Weekend Update hosts, you don't think of Norm Macdonald as a real great Weekend Update guy.
He was funny.
But he was damn funny.
Very, very funny.
And so over the years, and there's two different compilations. I just have this one pulled up, and we'll listen to some of it. But, man, he, and we talked about, there was, and this is, remember, this wasn't during the time of we got the verdict and people were trying to form their opinion on OJ and the murder trial. This was in the heart of it that he was making his jokes.
Yeah, he was making the jokes when the trial began, after the trial, and for years on. And it's one of the reasons he got fired. Well, it's the reason he got fired from SNL. Don Ohlmeyer, the president of NBC at the time, was good friends with OJ Simpson.
Oh, okay.
Says to Lorne Michaels, hey, lay off, you know, the
Norm McDonald. You can't tell Norm Macdonald that.
Norm Macdonald's going a little hot on there. He said, knock it off. And Norm just kept going. And then he's not on SNL anymore.
I guess I didn't realize the context of that at the time.
Holy God, was he funny.
Yes. So here's just a couple of them. We'll kind of take a break. The one I start out with is when OJ actually has released his book, I Want to Tell You by OJ Simpson. And here's what Norm had to say about that particular instance.
In his book, O.J. Simpson says that he would have taken a bullet or stood in front of a train for Nicole. Man, I'm going to tell you, that is some bad luck when the one guy who would have died for you kills you.
The week of...
Wow.
I mean, the week of the verdict was his famous line of, it's official, murder's legal in California, and it's the perfect joke.
Well, this one is great because it flips the premise when you go, yeah. Oh, man, that's bad luck, and you're thinking it's something about OJ bad luck, but instead it's the best luck.
You don't get worse luck than that. And OJ announced this week that he's coming out with a new book called I Want to Tell You. And if it's successful, OJ will work on yet another book entitled From Football to Prison, My 25 Years of Showering with Other Men.
That's a thinker, because it takes a second to get the full effect of that joke.
And finally, in honor of the 50th anniversary of their first publication, Random House will be releasing special commemorative issues of many Dr. Seuss classics. The first to hit the bookshelves will be Green Eggs and Ham and OJ is Guilty.
Judge Ito was interviewed.
Now, it's crazy when we look back, too, with the OJ trial, of the celebrity that came from not just the people who were doing their job.
Sure.
Judge Ito became a celebrity for no other reason than just he was the judge of the case.
This week by a local TV station in Los Angeles, asked by the interviewer if it was appropriate for a supposedly impartial judge to be on TV with his case still pending, Ito said, maybe not, but how appropriate is it to kill your ex-wife? It was revealed today that O.J. Simpson told police that Nicole Brown Simpson used to beat him up. He also claimed that she and Ron Goldman killed him. O.J. Simpson's lawyers have decided to skip hearings on DNA evidence and go right to trial. Asked why they did this, the lawyers replied, "We want to get O.J. acquitted as speedily as possible so he can get back to doing what he does best. Killing people."
God, I never realized how hard he went.
Brutal. Brutal.
Oh, if you're just tuning in, Norm McDonald's, you can find there's two different compilations. Yeah. This one's 11 minutes long.
We're just playing several. I mean, wasn't a week that went by
that he didn't.
That they didn't do this.
Yes.
And so there's always something in there.
Well, let's get to O.J. O.J. Simpson's lawyers say they don't want the families of Nicole Brown and Ronald Goldman in the courtroom during the trial. They're afraid the presence of the family members will just remind O.J. of how much more killing he still has to do.
Oh, my gosh. All right, we'll let a couple more go here to wrap up the show.
Well, O.J. Simpson's lawyers stopped feuding this week, finally. The Dream Team, F. Lee Bailey and Robert Shapiro, were able to put aside their differences and express their admiration for each other after O.J. threatened to cut their heads off.
Wow. All right, last one.
According to the National Transportation Safety Board, sleepy truckers are responsible for 1,000 deaths a year. In second place, O.J. Simpson at 2 deaths a year.
So you can find out more. Just search YouTube. Just search Norm McDonald, O.J. Simpson jokes. But I felt no better, more appropriate way to handle the news, big news of yesterday, than with Norm McDonald. Rest his soul.